Let me put my timer on so that I know not to go over.
All right. My name is Matt, and I'm an alcoholic. Amanda, thanks for asking me to speak tonight. Believe it or not, this is the first time I've spoken Tampa ever. I got sober this time. It was March 26th, 2010. That was my last DUI, so I try not to remember that. But I was in jail and couldn't drink in jail, and when I got out, I said that was enough. And this time around, it was. I have a sponsor, and I guess I attempt to sponsor others, but I'm available for sponsorship. So I guess I'll start from the beginning. It's interesting, right? Because I've never done this before, so I'm obviously nervous. You know, I talk to people. That's my job all day long. But this is new, and it's kind of themed along with, you know, being an alcoholic. You know, it wasn't something that, you know, that was ever supposed to happen in my life. I was not supposed to have a problem. I was not supposed to be in these rooms. This was not the plan. I grew up in Tampa, South Tampa. My parents are the best. They're my role models. They're my heroes. Still married, not drinkers. Typically do the right thing in every situation, just people you can look up to. And they raised me like that. You know, we had a great life. We had a great family. We got to do all the fun things that a family would do. Dad teaches you, you know, the right values, kind of helps bring you along to become a man. And, you know, you just are thankful for it. You know, I went to the nicest schools, played sports, did the whole deal. But, you know, I started kind of sensing, not that I was different, but because I don't think I was really different, but I started succumbing to, I guess, fears or insecurities around middle school, high school years. And I distinctly remember it being like when I was playing sports, and, you know, just wanting to be in the circle, like the circle of popular kids, the circle of cool kids. But just, I didn't want to stand out. I didn't want anybody to, you know, point out Matt, you know, just wanted to be part of the team, part of the group. And I just remember being like in middle school and high school, and like the way that guys, we would talk to each other was just like, all we do is make fun of each other. You know, it was like, we had the Dumbo, we had the fat kid, we had the big head, we had this, we had that. I mean, we didn't really know what we were doing. We were trying to, you know, that's how we converse. But like, I remember, you know, being, you know, my nickname was, at that point, was Fat Crane. You know, cranium, this, that. And like, I couldn't understand it, right? Because I was pretty good at sports. And I was always usually one of the better ones. But then they would like make fun of me for this stuff. And I'm, you know, then you pretend like it doesn't bother you. And, you know, you kind of just cope, right? You just kind of figure out a way to fit in and not, you know, take as little shit as possible. And that's what I did. I just kind of figured out a way to cope. And so, you know, moved through high school, playing football, doing the whole deal. And, you know, I remember the first drink I ever took. I mean, if I'm from South Tampa and I grew up here my whole life, you can probably guess where my first drink was. It was Gasparilla. So, you know, I was a freshman in high school, and I took a drink, and I knew, like, I mean, I didn't feel like, you know, you got a buzz, whatever, but I knew like I had done wrong, right? Like, my parents had instilled enough into me at that point where, like, I knew I was kind of stepping out of bounds and doing something that they would not be cool with if they found out. And the guy that was with me ended up getting just blasted, you know, couldn't walk, just hammered. And I ended up getting, not really in trouble, but, like, they figured it out, like, when he couldn't walk, and said, oh, did you drink? And, oh, yeah, I drank, but I didn't get drunk. And they're like, oh, and I think my mom was probably like, oh, my God, this is a freaking miracle. Because, you know, the kicker is of, you know, having the perfect family, having the upbringing that you would typically want, was that alcoholism runs in my family. So my mom's mom was an alcoholic, you know, each there's an alcoholic male in each one of my mom's sides of our family. Who, you know, most of them have long-term sobriety now, but it runs in our family. So I know from the moment I was born, she was pretty much like eyeing it, like, all right, which one is it going to be? Is it going to be your brother or is it going to be me? And so she was terrified of when, like, that point was going to come when I was going to start drinking and, you know, start, you know, playing the game. And I guess that was the first step, right? So that's when the first drink happened. Nothing crazy bad happened on my end, but that was probably the worst thing to ever happen, right? Because it was, nothing really bad happened. So I was like, shoot, this is new. Okay, no big deal, you know? And so we went kind of through high school, and you know, I played, you know, football, basketball, the whole deal, and I was pretty focused on that. And I was focused on the party. On the weekends, finding out where the parties were and going to the parties. But, you know, we did bad stuff and we, you know, just the typical, you know, stupid high school kid stuff. You look back now and you're just like, oh, Jesus, that was just stupid. But it never, like, really got too really out of control. I'm sure that had something to do with the sports and being focused and just not really having the time to invest in drinking and partying and kind of learning about it, like, I did with other stuff. So, I mean, at some point I got to college. I went to University of Florida, did the whole fraternity thing. And at that point, I didn't have sports anymore. And, you know, partying kind of became my sport. Became, you know, it's like, all right, I was good at sports, and I'm going to be good at this. And, you know, drinking was obviously a huge, huge part of that. And, so, you know, you move your way through college, you move your way through your freshman year, you're getting hammered, you're getting blacked out, it's fun, you know, you're smoking weed, and it's just, you know, life is freaking great. It doesn't get any better than this. You can have 20 bucks in your pocket, not know how you're going to get your next meal, but, like, you have no stress, like, nothing. You're just like, oh, whatever, you know, I'll figure it out. Where's the party tonight? Who's having the kegger? And so that was that, but it just kept escalating. It just kept escalating, and, you know, I went from pot to psychedelics to, you know, other stuff. And it just, the chemicals just kept coming. And I kept getting more and more into it. We started following drug bands all around the country and being like, we love the music. It's awesome. You know, Fish, Panic. It's just awesome. But really, it was just like a redneck rave. It was like, I mean, it was like, all right, let's see how we can scheme together enough money to buy an arsenal of drugs, bring along a lot of alcohol, and go somewhere for like 3 or 4 days and just lose our minds. And it was awesome. I mean, it was a lot of fun. But, you know, I had to pay the consequences. And what ended up happening to me was that, I think it was somewhere around my junior year, you know, my drug taking had escalated along with my drinking. And one night I had like a really bad panic attack. And if any of you guys have experienced panic attacks, you know, you take that on top of doing, you know, copious amounts of substance, you think you're freaking dying. I mean, you literally, I thought I was dying. I remember being on my bed, like, looking at my roommate, who's like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Being like, dude, if I pass out, like, call the ambulance, because I think I'm dying. And like, you're, hopefully you're not going to die. But to me, it was my reality. I really thought that I was going to die. And anyway, I didn't die, right? Obviously, I'm here right now. But I remember the next day I got up, and like typically in college, we'd get up and we'd like, you know, rip a bowl and be on with our day. And like when that happened to me, like it went from like somebody who used to do that every day to like all of a sudden when I would do that, I would have like another panic attack. And I would, like, my anxiety would just, it was just, I didn't know what was going on. Like, I was smarter than this. Like, I was supposed to be able to beat drugs and alcohol. Like, I was supposed to think my way out of it. Like, this was not going to happen to me. Like, I knew when to stop. But all of a sudden, like, I had built this foundation of how I was, you know, of my life. You know, we revolved around all this stuff. And then something changed. And the crazy part was that, like, even though it changed for the worse, I still kept doing it. It was like getting punched in the face, right? And like, it was horrible, like, you know, and I would do it again, and I'd be like, whoa, that really sucked, and like, maybe I shouldn't do that again, but then I'd do it again. So as a result, like, I got this anxiety, which then was, you know, kind of steamrolled into depression, but my drinking got bad. You know, Xanax got prescribed to me and whatever else they told me that I would get to like take the anxiety away. And I just remember like my roommates, like I just started blacking out all the time. And, you know, I didn't know it then, but I know it now. And I was just medicating. That was like the one time that like the anxiety would go away. And so alcohol was my medicine and it worked. And, you know, that's when people started being like, dude, something's wrong. Like, you know, you get way too messed up. And so like their nicknames stopped changing and they went from Fat Crane. You know, by this point I had lost some weight and maybe gone through puberty or whatever. And, you know, then it was like, the next one was like Crazy Crane and, Hurricane and, yeah. And so I was like, all right, which stage is coming out tonight? Is it going to be a level 3, a level 4, a level 5? Because we don't know, you know. And it was like, it was fun to a degree, right? Because everyone, like, you know, I kind of filled into this character. It was like, let's, you know, we're going to party. We're going to do it right. And it's going to be crazy. It was cool, like, unless you could, like, not live with me or, like, not be my girlfriend or, like, not be my brother or my parents, because like it was cool when you were in the party, like from like the beginning of it, because it was fun, we did have a good time. But like when you were there for like the bad stuff, you know, like the next day or like really late into the night, like it just got weird and it got sad and it got depressing. And yeah, you all know what I'm talking about, you're sitting in this room. But you know, it wasn't kind of how I drew it up. But, you know, I went through college, and somehow I didn't get in that much trouble in college. I graduated, and I got done with school, and, you know, I didn't really think about what I wanted to do with the rest of my life when I was in school. I just was like, let's focus on this party thing. I really don't want to get out of this game. But eventually I did, and I remember coming back to Tampa, and that's when I started noticing it, because, like, you have to go to a job, and you have to, like, show up, and I was always pretty good at showing up, right? But I just like wouldn't sleep the night before, or like I would, you know, I'd be there, but I like wouldn't really be there kind of guy. And I started being like, well, maybe that tonight, like I'll go out and like I won't get like blacked out, or I won't like I'll go home at like 11 o'clock, or I'll go home at 12. And like every time it was like, no, like 2 o'clock in the morning on a Tuesday night by myself, like everyone else has gone home, and I'm like still scoping the bar, seeing if there's anybody else, you know, left, you know. And it's just like, fuck, how did I end up here? I go, well, how come I couldn't go home? And you know, that was I just was baffled by it, you know. But then I just, you know, wake up the next day or get over it and be like, all right, it'll be different next time. And then I got arrested for the first time, like real arrest. Like, actually, I had to go to jail. You know, I was over in St. Pete, you know, going to a concert on Wednesday night with my buddy. I remember my buddy from college was coming to town, big party guy. I'm like, we're just going to go to the concert, not going to go out afterwards. Didn't happen. Went to the concert. Like, at this point, I'm like, do not care at all. Like, I think I decided I didn't need to go to the bathroom in the bathroom, but on the bar. And when someone, you know, and this is just kind of alcoholic I was. It was more like, you know, the cops show up and they're like, "Let me see your driver's license," and I take out my wallet and throw it on the ground and tell them to fetch. And you know, there's consequences to those actions. And the consequence for me was to get the handcuffs put on so tight that I couldn't feel my thumbs for a week. But I got arrested, and I'm like, oh, Jesus, this is not cool. And before this, like, one of my good buddies had been going to Alcoholics Anonymous. He's still out there. You know, he's a functioning crackhead, if you can believe that. And we talk all the time. But and he kept being like, "Yeah, man, this is. I'm keep going to this AA thing, and like, you're probably going to be there one day." And I'm like, "Okay, whatever." But I got arrested, and like, at that point, I still wasn't like, I was on my own, but I wasn't really like, I still depended on my parents for a lot of stuff, and like, they were always my security blanket, and I was kind of like, they're gonna ditch me right now, like, they're totally gonna tell me like, you're on your own, dude, like, unless you change. And so I was like, all right, well, I'll just tell them I'll go to rehab. Like, that'll, like, one step ahead of you, like, I'll go to rehab and it's going to be all better. And so that's what I did. And my first meeting was at Bayshore on Friday night. Anyway, you'll just tell me when I'm getting ready to be over. But I went to Bayshore on Friday night and heard some things that, like, I related to, and then the next day I went to rehab, and it was cool. Just like the gal who shared earlier, same thing. It was like, cool, this is sweet, like, month off, like, you know, I can deal with this, get out, and I'm like, all right, I'm gonna stay sober. Like, my parents put me through rehab. Like, I'm not a, like, if you can tell, like, I have a lot of respect for my parents. Like, they're like I would screw over a lot of people and did not care about a lot of people. But I do care about my parents a lot. And the fact that they put me through there, they did that, I was not going to, like, hurt them. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to do this thing. I stayed sober for almost a year and a half. I went through the steps, did the whole deal, got a girlfriend, but didn't really get into the fellowship at all. I was still kind of, you know, did not really, this place was the penalty box, and I was in the penalty box, and like, I was missing out, and everybody else was, you know, having fun, partying, and like, I wasn't, and I just, you know, I got bored, and my girlfriend and I broke up, and my best friends were still ripping and running, and, you know, I remember when we broke up, and I kind of decided, I was like 24 at that time. I'm 33 now. Wow. And I remember sitting my parents down, I think like the old Monster Lobster, and being like, all right, guys, I'm going to drink again, and this is how it's going to go, and this is why it's going to work this time. And it was like a PowerPoint, you know, like, it's like, so number one, I have my own job now, and I can pay my own bills. And number two, I know what I did wrong last time, and it's going to work out, you know, whatever. It's like a whole list, and they're just looking at me like, oh, Jesus, like, please, please don't do this. Like, this is a bad idea. But they couldn't stop me, right? I mean, like, I'm supporting myself. I'm an adult. And so, like, what are they going to do? I didn't do anything. 6 months later, first DUI. And, like, let me go back a little bit, because when I first came into this program, they laid all this stuff out for me from the very beginning. I mean, literally, they were like, read this book, which I did. You know, this is what you can look forward to if you decide to drink again. I mean, right there, this is what you can look forward to. The consequences will get bigger, they will get worse, it will not get better, and you will not beat this thing. But again, like, this wasn't supposed to happen to me. Like, I'm too smart for this. And I was going to show Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was going to show alcoholism that I am the exception. So, like I said, after the PowerPoint presentation, within 6 months, I had my first DUI. And, you know, I remember getting pulled over, and the guy was saying, you know, do you know why I pulled you over? And I'm like, DUI. And to me, it was like, about time. Like, you know, you should have pulled me over a long time ago. Like, this is whatever. And so I went through the whole process, and I thought maybe my dad picked me up from jail, and he was like, Have you had enough? And I'm like, yeah, I guess I've had enough for like being a month. I think I went a month, and I was like, all right, this is the new benchmark. I've come up with a new benchmark to this. I am an alcoholic. I fully admit that I'm an alcoholic, but as long as I don't get arrested again, I'm allowed to drink, right? So after a month, I'm like, all right, I'm back at this thing. Just don't get arrested. You know, setting the bar high. And so that's what I did. I took cabs everywhere. And you know, there's good nights, there's bad nights. But on the whole, like, you know, I'm still anxious. I'm still, you know, putting myself in situations that were really dangerous, really bad. I mean, about 27 years old, 26 years old, I moved down to South Florida for a really good job. You know, that's the funniest thing about my life is, like, despite all the debauchery, despite all the crazy stuff, like, I've done a good job of putting myself in position to succeed. I've worked hard. I've done what you would consider what I was supposed to do. And so I've been put in these situations, like, people would be like, man, like, why are you rolling the dice like this? But I went down to South Florida, and that was like devil's playground, man. I mean, it was on down there. I mean, it was like things don't close. You can drink at strip clubs. You could find whatever you want, whenever you want. And things just got dark down there. And, you know, it just took me to my knees. And I remember driving around sober, kind of being worried about, like, when's the next time the shoe's going to drop? Like, when am I going to get arrested? And I'm thinking to myself, this is not normal. Like, normal people do not drive around sober thinking, when are they going to get arrested? That's not a good thing. Like, your behavior is not going the right direction. But, you know, inevitably, you know, I always laugh. You know, you go to the DUI classes and people are like, I'm going to take a cab and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And, you know, it's like, My last night of drinking, this is the kind of guy I was. My last night of drinking, the night started at a judge's, like a party for a judge to raise money for his campaign. But there, my uncle and my girlfriend at the time, we started drinking at 5. She doesn't want to go out. I've probably had a couple bourbons. I'm like, okay, let me figure out how to get her home. I get her home. I don't know if she thought I was going home or what, but, like, I went right back out. I took a cab. Went to a strip club by myself. Continued to drink. Took a cab home, right? Because can't get arrested or else we can't drink. And then got a call from somebody else and had to make the decision of, do I stay or do I go? And got back into my car after taking a cab home and got popped for a DUI. Fail. Fail, fail, fail. So, you know, the whole, like, oh yeah, I'll take cabs. Like, dude, you get wrecked enough, you roll the dice. I rolled the dice, I got popped. And I just remember being in the jail cell, kind of just knowing that, like, this is it. This is the last stop. Like, you can't set the bar any lower, Matt. Like, you got arrested again. And then, like, all right, that's it. And I'm going to go back to Alcoholics Anonymous. And my life's going to suck for the rest of my life. I'm probably going to lose my job. Probably definitely going to lose my girlfriend. But whatever. Like, you know, I remember my brother telling me, Matt, it's the decision before the decision. When you decide to pick up a drink, like, you're deciding that within, like, because my track record at that point was, like, once every 2 years, you're getting arrested. And it's like, you pick up a drink, Matt, like, you're basically telling yourself you're going to get arrested. By that time, it was 5. And so you've got a guy in commercial and corporate banking for one of the biggest banks in the world at that time with 5 arrests. Like, let me tell you, that's a really nerve-wracking thing when you go in for a job interview and they ask you, like, to, like, let's go through, like, you know, do a background check. You're like, oh, Jesus. Like, how am I going to explain all this stuff? Right? Like, it's not a good feeling. But, you know, I came into the program this time with, like, very low expectations, but I knew I had to be here, and I knew where to go. I mean, I had gone here before, and it worked every time, but I just hadn't enjoyed it. And so there was a guy that I had met when I was tweaking at one point and needed to come into the program, and I would go to this 7 o'clock in the morning meeting in West Palm Beach because I couldn't sleep, and my anxiety was out of control, and I needed to, like, figure it out. His name was Curly, and I did not like Curly at all. He was way too intellectual for the way he looked, and I'm just like, this guy's totally, like, you know, BSing or whatever. But I knew Curly had moved to Fort Lauderdale, and he was the only person I knew in the program. And so, like, my ass was on fire, so I called Curly, and I said, dude, I need to go to a meeting. Like, I'm not good, and I need help, and you know, this guy came and picked me up and took me to meetings. And he kept saying, you know, do something nice. I asked him to be my sponsor. Again, I repeat, I did not like him. Here I was asking for help. And he kept saying, you know, do something nice for somebody. Don't tell me about it. I started going to some meetings during work, like, you know, in the middle of between lunchtime during work from downtown Fort Lauderdale. And, you know, for the first, like, 3 months, I was pissed. So pissed. Let me see where I'm at. Yeah. I was pissed. I was just like, this is going to suck. But I convinced that girl to stay with me. She was my hostage for that first 8 or 9 months. And, you know, slowly, like, things got better. Like, little miracles started happening in my life. You know, like, after that DUI, I was supposed to lose my license for a year and a half without even getting hardship because I didn't blow twice in 5 years. And somehow my lawyer, like, he went to the DMV hearing and convinced them that they didn't have cause to, like, give me a DUI. I don't know what he did. He calls me up and he's like, Matt, you know, I don't know. I've been doing this for 30 years. And he says, this has never happened. I've never got them to do this, but, like, you can get your license back. And I'm like, wow, like, what a miracle, you know, like, wow, good things are happening to me that I'm not, now I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. This is pretty cool. I learned to kiteboard when I was down in South Florida right before that. And it was like one of those things, one of those activities that, you know, kind of gave me something that I could do when I was not be wasted. And, like, I remember just being like, oh, I just wish that I would meet somebody who, like, in the program who liked to go kiting or, like, I could do this with. And, like, I'm joking. I'm sitting on the beach, and this guy that goes to the noon meeting from downtown, like, walks up to the beach with his kiting stuff, and I'm like, oh my god, what's on me? He was like, probably like, whoa, dude, like, you need to not be, you know, be so excited. We became really good friends, and, you know, we would, you know, get in his van and drive all around South Florida and over to Naples and you know, go kiting together. So at that point, you know, I'm sober probably like 3 or 4 months. I've started making some friends in the program. I'm working the steps with my sponsor. And, you know, slowly things are getting better. But I'm still, like, hypersensitive about putting myself in dangerous situations because I'm convinced, you know, the judge has already told me, like, if you get another DUI, you're actually going to have to go to real jail. Then, like, stay more than a night. And I'm doing all my DUI stuff. And so, like, I wasn't really doing much. You know, it was with my girlfriend, and I was going to meetings, and I was kiteboarding and working out and stuff like that. But maybe not even working out that much at that time. But, you know, just really not living life to life's fullest. And then about 8 months in, 9 months in, you know, my girlfriend did something for me that I couldn't do for myself, which was explain that her and I were not a good fit and that, you know, she was going to move on and try her luck with somebody else. And, you know, I was like, what? Like, yeah, you know, I was doing you a favor for, like, wanting to date you. Like, I was totally trading down. This is really not supposed to happen. You know, we broke up, and I remember, like, after that first initial kind of, like, pain of rejection, I remember, like, this is, like, one of the longest times in my life where I've actually been living the right way. Like, I haven't screwed anybody over. I haven't been drinking and doing crazy stuff. You know, like, things are good are happening in my life, and I'm like, you know what, like, I don't, you know, like, it's not about her anymore. Like, this is my journey. Like, this is about me going out and living my life and having a good time and figuring out, like, how to enjoy life. But how to enjoy life sober. And see, like, that was the biggest thing that when I talk to young guys or I talk to people who come in the program, you know, it's hard. It's like getting up here for the first time. You're nervous, right? You know, you're asking the girl to the dance the first time. You're nervous. What are they going to say? What's going to happen? You know, who knows? But, like, once you do it and you walk through that fear and you realize that, like, you know, life goes on, and you're going to either like it or you're not going to like it. But like, when you're sober, you have the power of choice, right? You can say, that was cool, I'll go back for a little more of that. Or you can be like, no, not really into that anymore. Not going to do that as much. But the fun is still there, you know? So I started realizing that I kind of was more in control of my own destiny. And, you know, something else kind of changed for me, you know, this time around. Like, when I was coming around before, like, being an alcoholic was like, I was it was a shameful thing. Whew, like, oh, I did not want to be people to know that I was an alcoholic. I mean, I remember driving to the dates and you know, thinking, how am I going to, you know, when it's time to have a glass of wine or whatever, how am I going to weasel my way out of this? You know, what kind of lies am I going to tell so that they can think, like, I'm working out hard, or, like, you know, I'm allergic. You know, something, you know, just something so simple, but, like, it's a lie. Like, why don't you drink? Because I'm an alcoholic. And drinking's not good for me. And when I got that second DUI, I kind of told myself, I'm like, I call it the reverse case of the F it's. You know, before that point, I would always just say F it. Like, I'd be around a group of friends, they'd all be drinking. And again, it's like that circle, right? Like, I just want to be in the circle. I don't want to be the one on the outside. Like, don't look at me. And so I'd be like, give me a drink, all right? And I took that drink for them. I did that drug for them. They didn't pay my lawyer bills. They didn't have the anxiety. They didn't have the depression. They didn't have the shame. They didn't have all the other stuff that came along with it. It was my stuff. And I said, enough of that. I said, you know, like, I don't care what anyone else thinks anymore. And I know, like, I used to think, like, that's bullshit. Like, of course you think what other people think. I remember distinctly being in a meeting one time and hearing some guy say that and being like, liar. Liar, liar, liar. But, you know, hello. But you know, at that point, like, I had reached my breaking point, and I was just like, I don't care. I told my boss, you know, I wasn't going to live a lie anymore. Like, being alcoholic is so important part of my. It's such an important part of my life. I mean, it's built a foundation for me that I can't ever repay. But it's not all. It's not everything. You know, it's not. It's not. There's a lot more to me than just the fact that I don't drink. And I told myself, like, you know, either getting on the bus or I'm leaving you behind. And if me not drinking is a problem for you, then, like, sorry, you're going to miss out on a good time. And that's what we had for the next, like, year, year and a half of being down in South Florida. I mean, I was sober. I made a lot of friends, both sober and not sober. We did fun stuff. We had paddleboard parties where I would invite lots of people who drank and people who didn't, and we would get some exercise, get some sun, and meet people. We'd go kiteboarding, we'd go down to the beach, we'd do trips, people who were sober stayed sober, people who didn't, believe it or not, didn't get, like, retarded, and they drank like normal human beings. And it was a lot of fun, and it was weird because, like, people started gravitating towards somebody that, like, actually knew what they wanted and weren't afraid to, like, be who they were. You know, trying to, like, live a lie. And I could, like, see it. You know, it's like, wow, this is kind of crazy. Like, all I ever wanted in life was, you know, I wanted girls, I wanted friendship, and I wanted action. And all of this is happening in sobriety to levels that I never, ever got when I was drinking and drugging. It was, like, trippy. It was like, you know, it gives you high almost. And I started realizing, like, this is when I had the spiritual awakening. This is when I had, like, the aha, which was, you know, you do this program right, you get right with you get right with yourself, and you don't apologize for it. And all of a sudden, you know, all of the upside that you thought you might have had with drinking, that upside's still there. The upside with work, the upside with friends, the upside with relationships, the upside with having a good time, it's all there, right? It's just you know, it's your perception of fun. Is what it is to you. It's not what it is to anybody else. You know, you decide how much fun you're having. But the great thing about it was, like, my downside was, like, way more limited than when I was drinking. So, like, of course I do, like, messed up stuff, and, like, I'm not always, and I don't always do what I'm supposed to do, but, like, I am so much more equipped to deal with that today than I was 5 years ago. And so because of my sponsor, because of my friends, because of my fiance, because of whatever, like, people can point that stuff out to me, and I could say, "Oh shit, you're right." And like, you know, like I need to. I'm acting out of fear, or I'm doing that, and I can kind of. You can tweak it and continue on your way, and that to me is like the most beautiful thing about this program is that like the opportunities, the way you feel about yourself, like everything, it's limitless. But we don't have to kind of. We don't have to crawl into that. You know, I always say you got to pay to play, right? Like, I mean, sure, if you fill your body full of a whole lot of chemicals, like, they work. You're going to have, like, feel pretty freaking good. But I can rest assured, like, you don't beat science. Like, you will feel horrible the next day. Your life will get worse. And this thing, you know, it's like you get all the good and a lot less of the bad. It's just weird because it wasn't supposed to be like this. This place was supposed to suck. And it just doesn't. You know, today, I mean, like I said, you know, because you can tell, I moved back from South Florida. You know, I'm employed. People, you know, want to pay me to do what I do, which is, you know, hilarious. But, you know, I have friends who are in the program that I care about a lot. I have friends who are in the program who know my situation, and they absolutely like love it. You know, go to their bachelor parties, go to Vegas. I mean, I have one. He's like my second dad, and they're big winos. And I sit over, like, I go to their house all the time, and like he always is like, he'll look at me and he'll be like, "How do you?" He's like, I don't get it. He's like, "You're not jealous? You're not like, you're not miss this? Like, how do you sit here like while everyone's drinking and doing whatever and like not like want to drink?" And I'm just thinking, I'm like, "Oh, you know." And I'm thinking to myself, "Dude, I feel bad for you. You know, like, I see you're going to, you know, basically, I'm having the same fun as he is with the same people doing the same stuff. If somebody walked in that room." And looked at what was going on. We're just all sitting there having a conversation, watching a game, doing whatever. He's just got a glass of wine. I got a Diet Coke. But to him, what's going on there is so much bigger. It's so much more awesome. But he gets to feel like crap the next day, and I get to like decide what the next adventure is. And that's like only an alcoholic can kind of understand, you know, can kind of get. And for me, it was just like, you know, when I took myself out of the penalty box and I started embracing this program, I started embracing all of the opportunities it can give you, all the upside rather than all the downside, that's when this thing took off. You know, and for all the people out there who are just coming in, it's hard at the beginning. You know, it's like, I mean, we built a foundation of beliefs and values for a long time that alcohol and drugs were like the way to go. You know, that's how a lot of us probably got laid for the first time. That's how a lot of us had a lot of fun times with our friends. That's everything that like human beings want or need or feel like is important to them was focused around alcohol or drugs. So like, of course, you're not going to come in here and be like, "Yay, I don't get to do that anymore." Like, that's not how it works. But if you keep coming back, you make some friends in here. You start taking chances, and not too big of chances at the beginning, but you know, you start living your life, you're going to start having positive things happen in sobriety, and it's infectious, you know. And once you start having positive things in sobriety, nothing gets better than that, because there's no more reason to go back out and drink. It turns on inside, and you say, "Why did I ever?" You know, I can get the same result without paying quarter of the price. Like, sign me up for that deal. And so that's what I did, you know, sign me up. So I guess, you know, if you can't relate to my story or kind of, you know, what I went through, you know, keep coming back, because there's a whole slew of people who have gone through different stuff and figured out why being sober has worked for them. You know, but just trust in the process. Trust that this way of life, if you are an alcoholic, will save your life. It'll give you a life that you can't ever imagine. It just takes a little bit of footwork on your end. It takes a little bit of being uncomfortable and stepping out and introducing yourself to someone. It takes a little bit of effort to say, you know what, I don't want to really go to the beach with a bunch of sober people, but I'm just going to do it and just see what happens. Or, you know, it's like, I don't want to, you know, talk to that person, but I'm just going to do it. And things just happen in your life, and, you know, you become happy and you don't want to drink anymore. That's all I have. Thank you.